Good morning. I'm with Mrs. Peter Holden, Shirley, and Peter Duncan at Middle Road in Havelock North. And on behalf of the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank, I'm asking them about their history of their families. And now, good morning, Peter, and good morning, Shirley.
Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jim. Well, I have indeed made some notes. First of all, I was born on the 17th of October 1927 in the nursing home in Hastings. I can't remember the name of the place, but I do recollect having visited some 6 years later when my sister or half-sister, Shirley Lane at that time, and now Shirley Holden, was born, and I was introduced to her. Now, my next memory, which is a real memory, is of the Napier earthquake. Pretty vague, but I seem to remember a tall boy tipping over my mother into the frights and the noise, and the following day going out into the summer house, which of course was wonderful for a very young child, out in the garden. I think I was accused of enjoying eating the dirt and other things of childhood. That's just a memory. And then my sort of next significant memory, I think, was the great flood and storm which occurred in April 1938 when I was 11 years old. Perhaps going back a bit, I was 3 years old, 3+ years old when the earthquake occurred. I was 11 years old when the big flood came. At that time, what seemed to be huge gum trees in the hills above my sister's home were blown down, and the whole of the Esk Valley was underwater to the tops of the fences. My stepfather and the rest of us went down to see it when it was dry enough to be able to be seen. I suppose my next memories from there would be, of course, Heriworth, going to school there, good school, lots of things to do. Before that, I was at St. Luke's, and we were the little sissies next door to the public school. We were scared of all of them, of this public school boys and girls. We learned to play hopscotch, and other forms of sport, which no doubt helped in life. During that time, I began to be involved with horses in particular. My mother was a very good horsewoman, and she had a horse called Kiwi, which was a great jumping horse, but terrible to, perhaps Shirley may remember that, very difficult to clip. Went crazy when got put in the loose box to be clipped. What else do I remember about that time? A horse called Hicko, which my sister learnt to ride on when she was tiny, tiny. The great rock above thee and the cabbage trees, now dead, and the hills just above. Other aspects of early life was a occasional visit to people in what was originally the 19,000-acre estate of the Timahunga family. And I think it was in 1860 that William John Douglas, the second of the pioneers in my family, acquired the leasehold on Timahunga and began to develop. He was at the age of 25, I think. He must have been a real entrepreneur, leader of men, because he began opening up this territory. I remember in particular, my mother was saying what a wonderful time they had as children, riding on their ponies up into the grasslands with torches and setting afire the grasses to clear the land so that it will grow sheep. I have written something about it in a book called Family History. No, not a book, in 4 pages, plus photos, which I've given to Jimmy.
Can you go back a little bit on into your father, grandfather?
My father began developing this land as he got certain areas developed in about 2,000 acre lots, he would sell them off, three or four sales, which would help him finance further development. And in the process, he developed one of the best Clydesdale workhorses, studs in the area. These, of course, were used for the very heavy ploughing and transport work at that time. We did go up to Pukatitri from time to time, where my stepfather had, I think, 3,000 acres or something of that sort, which was then very wild, and a lot of time was spent on scrub cutting, and then, of course, the annual shearing. I remember my brother and I got in considerable disgrace at one stage. They'd done the main mustering for the main shearing. I can't remember how many sheep were involved, but part of the process was bringing in the goats at the same time, because the goats were not very popular in the flocks, and they were all assembled around a sort of stockade next to the shearing shed. And my brother and I thought it was rather fun to throw stones at them and see them jump in the courtyard. Well, for some reason, unfortunately, one wise old billy goat thought this was no fun at all, and they didn't want to have stones thrown at them, and it climbed up a strainer post sign and jumped over, and the whole of the rest of the goats followed and took them all back out into the field again. We weren't beaten for this. My parents never beat me, but I don't think I was very popular. Nor was John. He's my older brother by 2 years, and now deceased. I think at one stage they had something like 19,000 sheep being sheared at Timahunga at that time. And as children, we went out to the old Timahunga with its old thoroughbred stables. I think it was a big photograph of the Great Eclipse as a decoration in it. Over the years, my grandfather died very young, at age 47, leaving behind 6 children. The oldest, my sister, 18, and the others you can see in my family history notes. At that time, there was belief that the Maoris were very angry with William John Douglas for insisting on building his house in a piece of land that was in some way tapu, was it called, sacred to some Maori burial past. At any rate, there was a story that no Douglas in the male line would get over the age of 50 years because of this desecration. Well, in fact, that proved to be true for many Douglases until perhaps 5 or 6 years ago, when Mark Douglas became more than 50. Other aspects of my recollections of that area included, I don't know if you remember him, Shirley, Old Willie in a shed near the old homestead. We know Old Mick it was, one of the oldest occupants of that place. And of course there were wonderful orchards around there with very good apples. No swimming pool. Duck shooting, of course, every year. My Uncle Ron, the youngest of the children of William John Douglas, he was a very good shot. All the brothers had gone to Christchurch. My sister Shirley had gone to Woodford. My mother Jean went to Iona, and my cousin Maggie went to Woodford, which Shirley went to later on.
And then later on in life, tell us a bit about that, and then we'll get on with Shirley.
Later on in life, well, during that time, I became a voracious reader. Fortunately, I grew up in this house, which had plenty of books in it. Also, I used to get quite a few prizes from Hereworth, books about, like, Jock of the Bushveld, The Call of the Wild, all about different parts of the world, one about Argentina, etc., and I became interested in the outside world. Before long, I was moving out of the Hawke's Bay by Palmerston, going to school in Whanganui, stopping on the way in Palmerston, where my great-grandmother was still alive. I remember being amazed at how much food she ate at that age. We used to get those awful thick sandwiches at the stopping places on the train to Whanganui. Anyway, that brought me into a wider world at secondary school, and there were at that time a number of people from the UK who were being evacuated from war in Europe to safety in New Zealand. We had a Swiss and an English guy and others. So I became more and more interested in the outside world. Then, having done fairly well academically, I went on to university in Otago. Not exactly the best choice, because of that time lots of my fellow schoolmates were qualifying as dentists and doctors in Dunedin, and Dunedin had the reputation as being the best university. I somehow drifted there with all the extra travel and expense of getting across the ferry and by train to Otago. But that didn't seem difficult at the time. At university, the reason I got involved in the arts faculty, not in the scientific faculties, partly because of a teacher at Whanganui, who was in fact the teacher of Latin, and the great enjoyment for his class was to somehow divert him away from Latin onto his belief in the Douglas Social Credit, which was an economic system developed in Canada at that time, which was meant to be the answer to the greed and mismanagement of the banks, which, of course, by that time we'd had the Great Depression. Lots of people had lost their livelihoods, lost their lands. Possibly also my own father, I've got very little documentation on this, was never talked about in the family, but my mother was, well, she married at about 18, or just after her father died, to a newly returned soldier from the First World War, David Lowe Duncan, son of the prosperous P&D Duncan engineering family in Christchurch. I vaguely remember having been in Christchurch and visiting the family early on. In particular, I remember wanting to be taken as a very small child across the road and down to the River Avon to see the ducks. And the people around me, my grandmother or somebody, said, "No, no, you can't go today. I can't take you today. I've got a bone in my leg." And the people around are laughing. And I sort of knew I was being somehow tricked at that time, stuck in my memory. I then vaguely remember a trip with a nanny that took me to Christchurch, where my then divorced mother was living. And of course, getting divorced in those days was a pretty disgraceful sort of thing people didn't talk about. I subsequently, much later, learned that it was possibly a rather nasty divorce, but not much in it, nothing in detail about it. At any rate, around that time, I recollect my mother taking a home near the Nimmin bus stop, where I met some, I was by then old enough to make friends with boys from next door, a fellow called Pat Land. Can't remember any more about that, but at that time my mother was meeting and then got married to my stepfather, Douglas Lane, who took on a new wife and two children. Of course, Douglas Lane was one of the prominent Hawke's Bay families, the Nelson family, of which Shirley knows much more about them than I do. Now, going back from university in Dunedin, I had an enjoyable time. I was probably clever enough to have done very well, but I was not very hard working and got through my exams all right. The most inspiring teacher I had was a fellow called Dr. Bernardelli, who was an Austrian grown up in Germany, and interesting stories of his experience as an economist, starting with the treatment of his father, who insisted that he repaid the whole of his primary costs from his future earnings. Well, that was at the time of the great economic depression in Germany, and in a few weeks after being presented by the bill with his father for his education, the currency went so madly inflated that he could pick up a couple of suitcases of 1,000 marks notes and hand the whole thing over to his father and say, "Here you are, that's the money." Now, how much of this is apocryphal, I don't know. At any rate, he subsequently was a teacher at Otago University, and a very lively and interesting teacher. Others I do remember was Miss Barron, the rather severe teacher of French. And I ended up having had a good time, drunk a lot of beer, taken part in the capping ceremonies, got a second class honours degree at the MA level, and somewhere along, well, about then, on completing my MA at Otago, I worked in the statistics department in Wellington and learned quite a bit about the construction of consumer and wholesale price indexes, which was a useful background. And later I was, I think, assistant or secretary to the Royal Commission on Sheep Farming in the High Country of the South Island, which was my first experience of taking notes and keeping records relating to the findings of the Royal Commission and preparing the report on it. So now I still have an interest in such documents, now much more sophisticated than they were then. About that time it became possible for suitably qualified people to join the British Colonial Service for service in colonies around the world. So I applied for that, and having done fairly well at school and being fairly active in sports in the rugby first 15 at Whanganui, got my cap there, breakaway forward, and our final year was in Christchurch, I think. We didn't win the tournament, I think we were second. At any rate, I qualified for joining the British Colonial Service, and before long I was on a ship, the Wanganella, I think it was, on my way to England, and somewhat to my disappointment, the university I was assigned to was London University rather than the historic Oxford or Cambridge that I was hoping for. However, living in London and going to the London School of Economics and the new university and learning gave me a broad idea of the British Empire and its colonies in their declining years. So I went out to Nigeria as a cadet, but with an economic degree behind me, and was before long, first of all, working as the lowest of the low cadet in the office of the resident in Ibadan, one of the provinces of western Nigeria. And over my 11 years, I was mainly at headquarters in Ibadan, in the western region of Nigeria, dealing with economic finance, and ultimately became the advisor to the Minister for Economic Development in Nigeria as it moved towards independence. Independence came. I didn't want to go to another thing. I was looking around for a new job. I would get some sort of a gratuity and pension from my previous work, from my 11 years as a colonial service. I was going out to New Zealand, and I stopped in California to catch up with some friends, and there I was given the opportunity to apply for a job with Stanford Research Institute, which was a think tank associated with University of Palo Alto, California. And that led me to a career in economic development, first of all in Cyprus, Asia, and various other countries, including jobs in Mexico and various others that you can see from the documents I'm sending you. A long spell of 4 years in Brazil, living in Leme, literally the next door beach to Copacabana, where I was coordinating the World Bank transport project, great importance to the future development of Brazil. Then I had a long spell, another 7 years, as the project working with the Minister of Planning in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where I successfully guided the completion of 2 5-year development plans before passing on to colleagues to continue with the same project for another several years. While I went off, the next major assignment was in Indonesia, where I had a wonderful opportunity to work with a Dr. Habibie, who later, for a year and a half, became the president of Indonesia after the downfall of the long-term military dictator, but in many ways savior of Indonesia as a non-communist country. I have since met with of him and of his various books and publications relating to the time when I was working with him, and regret to say that my work there didn't go as well as it should have done. However, I'll have to think about that more before I decide what to do about that, if anything, like writing about it. After my period with the Board for the Application of Technology in Indonesia, I worked in various development projects in and around Jakarta until it was time for me to move on, having taken over and trying to keep alive a polo club, which was called the Batavia Polo Club. And I kept it alive in spite of the economic crisis at that time. And that, in fact, led to my present activity, which is as a retired, active, not very physically active, but active partner in a 10.5-hectare leased property in the highlands of the tea country of central Sri Lanka, at about 1,000 meters, where I'm hoping to work with my partners in reforesting land that was originally rainforest with garden farms for the local people. We hope to replace the degraded and abandoned tea country that is now grassland and very eroding, and we are hoping to reforest it so it will recover its rainforest cover, mainly with native trees, then interplant it below with commercial crops, including citrus and cinnamon and organic vegetables, in the hope that we will guide an activity that will spread to a larger number of acres of land and contribute to the efforts being made to mitigate the more troublesome aspects of climate change. And that's what I'm doing now, with occasional visits, as now, to my still beautiful, still beautifully sunny, but quite cold at times, hill above the Great Hawke's Bay, looking towards the Ruaini Ranges, and thinking to myself, how is it that I possibly have ended up with another view across a great valley to the mountain ranges in the distance, in a climate which is possibly better than the one here, never much below 15 degrees centigrade, never much above 28, and with a lot of rainfall scattered irregularly throughout the year. So I have a wonderful retirement activity, and yet succeeding in maintaining my love of my place where I grew up and my remaining friends and relatives there. Thank you, Jim, for the opportunity to put this all together.
Peter, you've certainly covered your life. Very interesting indeed, and very, very happy to have you. A very good report. I'm sure it'll go down well. Thank you.
I forgot to mention I have a sort of a love-fear relationship to horses. As a child, I was riding a little pony here with my brother around and one thing and another. My brother gave a hurry up to the pony, which set off, and I lost my balance and got stuck up in the stirrup and was dragged until my stepfather, really knowing what had happened, managed to catch up with me and stop the pony. So I'd always been a bit of a scaredy cat, so I was always attracted to horses because of the family background, but always a bit scared of them too. So I was never a great polo player, but I could play.
Now, Shirley, just give us a bit of a history about you.
Well, I was born in Hastings in 1934, and I had a wonderful childhood, very good parents, and I loved horses and ponies and things. And I had two brothers that were, I used to be a real nuisance to them. They always got told they had to take Shirley all the time, and I always remember we had a big gum tree outside our house, and they used to make toffee, and then they'd climb up the tree and hang it down on bits of string, tempting me and leaving me there to jump for it. Do you remember that, Peter?
I don't. Dougie told me about it also, I don't believe.
And I remember in the war years, of course, I can remember the Marines sitting out here on our veranda, a young girl of sort of, what would I be, 8, I suppose. Having the Marines here was just amazing, because, well, to me, they were just wonderful.
And you probably also remember going with your father in the Home Guard.
I was just going to say that. And Dad was in the Home Guard. And I used to get taken along on the treks too on my little pony. And I used to absolutely love that. It was wonderful. I got married and I went to Mrs. Doyley's in Woodford House. And then I got married pretty young in 1954 to Peter Holden from Springvale, Tikakino. And we had a long marriage and three children. One thing I remember about Dad's father, J.E. Lane, who was married to Ida Nelson, who was William Nelson's oldest daughter. He was a wonderful man and terribly kind. And every time I turned up at his house on my pony, he always gave me fun. And in those days, that was pretty special.
Now tell us about that famous racehorse, Picaroon. Where did that come in?
Well, Dad had bought Picaroon at the Trentham Sales for, I think it was 180 guineas, and he turned out to be a very good horse, trained by Bob Quinlivan and Hastings. And after Dad died, Dad won 3 Gold Cups with him, but after Dad died, Peter and I continued to race Picaroon, and he won 11 Gold Cups in 29 races. So it was a wonderful start to our sort of introduction into racing. We had a lot of fun with over the years. And
you, were you tied up with the horse with the show jumping?
I used to hunt and show jumping, but I never did FEI jumping for some reason. I don't know, I just got married too young, I think, and had 3 children and just never got into the FE side of it. But I hunted all the time, and that was wonderful. And anyhow, Peter and I were married for just on 57 years, so, and he passed away 3 years ago.
Very good. But, I'm sure there's a lot more than I could potwheeze out of you, really gave thought.
I'm sure that's all that's of great interest to people.
And she's always welcomed me back from time to time, decided I ought to get back home. And I just thought of another thing I wanted to mention, which relates our family together, and cricket. At the age of 11, on the 17th of October, it must have been, or very close to it, it would be autumn show time, and that time we had the autumn show in the
Waikoko,
and my birthday cake consisted of 11 cricketers over the ice. Although I was never a lover of cricket, in fact, I seriously disliked it as a child. It was in those beautiful Waikoko gardens, which linked the Nelson family to my family.
Your birthday was in October, is it? 17th or thereabouts?
October the 17th, yes. Oh,
and I'm on the 15th.
Yeah. And I'm on the 26th. We're all October babies.
Oh, well, I want to thank you both indeed for that talk about your life and everything, and I'm sure the Knowledge Bank will be very, very happy to hear about it.
One of the things I do remember, which is of interest now that they're building a lovely big smart new hotel in Havelock, is my days of on riding my pony and tying him up to the old Havelock pub. I used to tie him up to the water trough there.
Is that water trough still there?
Oh, no.
No, that's gone now.
Has it been taken somewhere?
No. Yeah, the whole thing, the whole village has changed. The trot's gone. You wouldn't know where it was, I can remember.
In somebody's fire, I would think.
Yeah, Bruce McKenzie and Ian Niman and I used to have some great times down at the Happy Tab. The policeman.
McDuff's Hotel.
6 o'clock, he'd come round, the policeman, now, Mr. Connor, all out of here, all gone. Yes, sir. Yes, they're all gone. Be silence in the back bar. And he'd go down the road. Anyway, once or twice, a bit of a play. A bit of tomfoolery would pick the other one up and throw him in the horse trough. But then a little later with the policeman, you used to hear, knock, 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 knock. The Connor said, door's unlocked, constable. Just come in. I knew you boys were in.
Yeah. A lot of fun had in that old pub.
We
had a lot of fun, all right. Good clean fun too in those
days. McDuffs, you remember the McDuffs that were there first?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do.
You remember them. You should remember them better than me, Jim, probably.
Well, we used to deliver the beer down and drop the kegs down underground there with the ropes. And I always remember that.
And the butcher shop on the corner. Really is incredible, the development of it. That's what impressed me about going up to Pukatitri. What I recollect is a struggling, lots of that manuka to be cut and so on, and scattered. And now it's all pretty rich looking farmland. But we also went to Ball's clear. It's an interesting little message in the thing about how there was something like 220,000 acres now down to 200 or something like that. Do you remember that?
33 hectares, I think it is. Yeah. Not very big.
From about 230.
No pub up there. Do you remember the pub that used to be there? And the general store and the school. You know, all that's gone.
They've got a golf club there.
Yeah, we drove into the golf club. Had a look at that. A lot of sheep on the golf course.
Have you ever played golf there?
No. A bit turned off now, Jim. We're waffling on.
Yeah, but quite often that's when...
Oh, is it?